This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
8 seconds to go. The Pacers are not going to call the timeout. Halliburton has it with three, driving with two, pulling up, and hitting with 0.3 seconds to go. How many more times can this team do that?
That end of game call courtesy of Mark J. Boyle, Pacers Radio. If you went to bed early last night, you missed criminal behavior, a straight up robbery in game one of the NBA Finals. And we will talk a lot about the chaos in OKC in a moment because JVT, as you said, walking into the studio today, you have thoughts. Mm-hmm. So we will get to that. Jonathan Mondoble, Stormy Bonantoni with you here on Money Moves VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Big show over the course of the next 2 hours. In 30 minutes, Jeremy Plonk, First Bet racing analyst, is going to join us to preview the Belmont Stakes on Saturday. End of the hour, we've got Nate Kreckman, radio host, 92.5 FM Altitude Sports. Get his thoughts on the Rockies season and their sweep of the Marlins this past week, plus a whole lot more there in an hour or two. Mike Palm, VP of operations here at Circa Resort and Casino. He's going to join us in studio for a half hour. Lots to discuss. So let's kick things off the way we always do here. Producer Brian, let's run it down.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the Rundown.
All right, top three items on deck today. Of course, we'll get to all the NBA Finals action in a moment, but also Aaron Rodgers' watch is over, JVT.
Oh, yes, it's all over. I am amazed about, there was so much yesterday when this came down. There was talks about the betting market and, would it adjust, and just, utter surprise, and Steelers, relatively well-known Steelers fans being like, oh, it's so surreal. I'm like, we knew this was happening.
Yes.
What are we doing? We knew it was happening.
I was very annoyed at all of the commentary I heard and tweets I saw about the Steelers' odds not moving.
Yeah.
They're 40-1 to win the Super Bowl, 40-1 again. Yeah, no kidding. We've been talking this whole time about how they've been priced as if Aaron Rodgers is already on the team, even though he wasn't. That was built in.
Yes, I'm with you. I was like, this was one thing where you want a real conspiracy theory of my tinfoil. The NFL told Aaron Rodgers to wait until the NBA Finals started to then sign so they could try to steal the headline away from the sport. It did not work because yesterday was all about the NBA.
It had been a pretty dull 30 days for the NFL news-wise, so we got some action, but it did not compare, to what we saw last night. Which leads us to number two in our breakdown today. We've got plenty of NHL and NBA postseason talk on deck, including the MVP ladder breakdown. We'll do this exercise with Conn Smythe next segment as we preview game two of the Cup Final that's coming up tonight. And again in the NBA in hour two, but this is something you've been doing for years in the association.
Yeah, I stole the idea from NBA.com, so it's not an original thought, but it's essentially a breakdown of the top five finals MVP candidates, how they perform and where they're at. And I will say, I really wrestled with who to put at number one, because I think that there's the obvious choice, and then I think there's the right choice, and we'll talk about who that is.
I love that discussion. Let's kick things off, though, with game one. Pacers stun the Thunder in OKC. 111-110 is your final. A 10-point road dog in the Indiana Pacers. Cash plus 340 on the money line. This despite turning the ball over all night, trailing in the fourth quarter by 15 points. Indiana took its first and only lead of this game with 0.3 seconds on the clock, compliments of a Tyrese Halliburton go-ahead shot.
Well, you should have seen it coming the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
It's all your fault.
If you ask social media, we all knew. Everybody knew it was the Pacers.
So I have a couple of these. We did this when you were gone. I did not send these to Ortega because these are kind of wordy, but we went through, if you remember, Ortega, after the comeback against New York, my stupid Indiana Pacers statistics from last week. I have a couple of other stupid Indiana Pacers statistics from this comeback. Indiana has come back from down 15 or more 5 times, the most such comebacks in a single postseason in the play-by-play era since 1997. Pacers are 5-3 when they go down by 15 or more in this postseason. 5-3. The Indiana Pacers are the first team to win an NBA Finals game with 0 20-point scorers since the 2013 Heat. Tyrese Halliburton, the highest clutch win probability added due to field goal shooting during a single postseason. Tyrese Halliburton is first overall, 2.48. The second place player of all time, LeBron James back in 2013 at 1.86. He is nearly lapping the field when you're talking about what he's doing in clutch time. Since 1998, only 4 teams have won a playoff game despite leading for 30 seconds or less. The 1999 Spurs, in game two of the West Finals, 2001 Mavs in game five of the first round, 2002 Lakers in game four of the West Finals, and then the 2025 Pacers in game one of the NBA Finals, and of course the Pacers with the fewest time, 0.3 seconds, leading. Halliburton is now 13 of 15 on clutch shots this season, that is shots to tie or go ahead in the final 2 minutes with a whole bunch of jump shots. In fact, 13 of those 15 are jump shots. And Tyrese Halliburton is, is the only player with three go-ahead shots in the final 5 seconds in a single postseason. He has more of those in the 2025 postseason than Kobe Bryant had his entire career. And since play-by-play began in 96, LeBron is the only player with more than Tyrese Halliburton. We can continue to go down the list of these statistics. The whole point here is...
You didn't even say the 0-182 that's been making the rounds this morning, too, of teams in the NBA Finals that are trailing 9-plus points in the last 3 minutes. So there's another one just to throw in there. It's just ridiculous what they've done. By the way, and Tyrese Halliburton, give him all the props in the world for that shot in the clutch when you need to have it. But, like, everyone's just forgetting how bad he was for the first three quarters of this game. Also, he still goes under the points prop and the three-point prop that we were talking about yesterday, too. It's just this Pacers team, I don't want to say this in a disrespectful way because it's unbelievable what they're doing, but they're, like, cockroach-esque in that they just don't die. And they continue to come back. It just... The numbers speak for themselves. Bad beat, by the way, on anybody that did have Halliburton for a buzzer beater. 41-1, I think, was the number I saw going around on social media with the 0.3 seconds. That does not cash for you.
No, it does not. And we were talking with Scott Seidenberg when I was on with him the other day. He brought up the wire to wire, which is essentially leading at the end of every single quarter. And then, of course, final quarter being the fourth quarter. You'd bet that for OKC. And you led wire to wire. It literally wire to wire. Yes. You didn't even need a lead at the end of the quarter. They literally led every second of this game until, of course, the final one.
My OKC to win all their home games.
Sure.
That goes out the window day one. Anybody that had OKC in any of those parlays just as a, you feel like that should be an automatic win piece to your parlay, that dies last night as well. Let's take a listen to Tyrese Halliburton after the game on the way this thing played out, because it was ugly for them. We mentioned the turnovers off the top for a while, but that they continue to come back.
There was never a disbelief as a group, honestly. You know, you have a quarter, like you have a half like that where you're just throwing the ball to the other team. And we like chaos. We like controlled chaos, but that was just chaos, ugly. But I think we as a group came and said, hey, you know, we got like, felt like we got like 20 turnovers in the first half. We only gave up, I don't even remember how many points, I think it was like nine. Yeah, that's not that bad, you know, if you think of it that way, you know, try to look at it glass half full. This group never gives up. We never believe that the game is over until it hits zero. And that's just the God honest truth. That's just the confidence that we have as a group. And, you know, I think that's a big reason why this is going on.
It's so unreal.
It's unbelievable. There's been at least one game every series of this postseason for the Pacers where they look dead in the water. They should be losing. The win probabilities are like 2-3%.
So there was another one. How about this? You want another one? I think this math is accurate. So we'll put this with a grain of salt here. Tyler Smith covers the Pacers. Pacers now have a win in every round with win probability of 0.3%. Yep, 2.1%, 4.1%, 2.6%. Yeah, 1 in 1.5 million chance that they would have won all four of those games, if that math is accurate.
Unbelievable. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, they deserve a ton of credit. I think the intricacies of how they pulled this off are pretty interesting now as we move forward here for Oklahoma City. You know, as we talked about, too, you brought this up. If you just look at it on its surface, the improbability of winning a game in which you turned it over 24 times or 25 times and you took, I think, was it 16 fewer shot attempts or whatever it was, like, generally those are games that you're going to lose, let alone, you know, we'll talk about covering whatever. You're just supposed to lose those games. And so now OKC has a lot to look at for themselves as you spin this forward to game two. And here they are. I have lost many a bet just pushing back with logic and just being like, dude, this doesn't make any sense. 11.5.
Yeah.
The spread for game two. I can't. That's nuts. That's insane.
And so the odds have bumped up for a reason, though, I would say, too, especially after you saw what happened in that series with Denver, right, where they lose game one by two in the final seconds of that game. They bounce back in game two, 43-point win in that one. So I think, like, the odds indicating OKC has been so great at home. Let's just pump this up a little bit more because everybody's going to bet them to bounce back in the zigzag theory.
Yep.
How do you feel about that number? You can't do it.
You can't.
No way.
As somebody who is pro OKC, like you can't. You can't do that at all when you're talking about laying a big number like this. And maybe they come out, maybe it's the same thing as the first half and that actually carries out. Because look,
Is that a first half angle then?
I mean, maybe. I know Scott had some pretty good numbers for that, or the first quarter for the team total for Indiana. But I just, you can't realistically look at this game, the way the Pacers have performed for the most part, and swallow 1.5 to 2 more points in the closing number in game one just because the Thunder lost game one. I can't do that. And we even talked about it yesterday, right? Where I thought like, yeah, you know what? 10.5 probably goes too high. We'll probably see a little bit of a buyback. But there's many things OKC can do better. I think that Mark Dagnall didn't have the greatest game. We can talk about that a little bit later. I thought, Chet, what did we talk about when we talked about how the Pacers were going to win this series? Something we did hit on yesterday. The role players weren't going to play particularly well. Mm-hmm. And there were times where the role players did not play well for Oklahoma City. Yep. Chet was awful around the rim. When you look at Jalen Williams missing a wide open three near the end of that game, we can go down the list of guys that didn't really come to play. I think there's a lot of different things that can change. But again, even if those things change, why would I willingly lay 11.5 with a number that closed 10.5 in some spots and they lost the game outright?
Yep. OKC in the series goes from minus 700, minus 650 to minus 300 favorites. Pacers from plus 500 to plus 245. So those numbers more than cut in half. Is this the time to buy on the dip? Like, is this the best number you're going to get?
You could, I guess.
Technically, I don't know. Are the Pacers a team of destiny? Do we believe social media that they're a team of destiny?
Let's steer into the heel business. They didn't deserve to win. They're clowns. They're going to lose the next four. They're lucky to be here. They don't belong.
When we return, game two of the Stanley Cup final on deck coming up tonight. Keep the postseason talk rolling. Oh, what a night. Last night in the NBA. My goodness. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Checked out VSiN.com yet, you're missing out. So much action on the website right now. Matt Grissom's got the College World Series Super Regional Guide out. Game one underway right now out there from Chapel Hill. Greg Peterson's got MLB best bets later on today. Expect some action from Zach Cohen covering the French Open, Tyler Shoemaker on the WNBA, and Jonathan Davis has his Panthers Oilers game two picks right now. You can sign up to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as little as $9.99 a month to get full access to all VSiN articles. Just head over to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up. We are up Arizona, by the way, 1-0 right now in Chapel Hill against North Carolina. The Tar Heels, huge favorite in that series, huge favorite in game one today as well. So
yes,
we'll keep tabs on that.
My team to watch is two. So hopefully it goes better for the Tar Heels, even though I don't have anything involved there. Can I give you one more? Because Julian Edlow tweeted this out after we started the show. Can I give you one more Pacers thing?
Roll.
The longest in-game odds on Indiana in these comebacks here. Game 5 versus Milwaukee, they were 30-1. Game 2 at Cleveland, they were 30-1. Game 1 at New York, they were 40-1. And then game 1 at OKC, they were 15-1. So, again, I don't know how you didn't see this coming.
It's just also, we saw on social media yesterday, I tweeted about just how crazy the Pacers have been in the final minutes of games.
Yeah.
And somebody tweets back at me saying, oh, Money Moves never gave them a chance. I'm like, I don't think it was a hot take saying that I think Oklahoma City is going to win this series. And it's also game one. What are we doing? Am I crazy to think that this is an overreaction?
Just to yesterday?
Yes.
Look, of course. Like it was a very good win for the Indiana Pacers. Tyrese Haliburton does it again. It is the single greatest run performance-wise.
It's unbelievable what they've done. Yes. They defy basketball logic.
Oh, of course, 100%. Like, again, the improbability, we read it off. Every single statistic about this team starts with since 1977, since 1971, oh, and whatever, all this sort of thing. It's been absolutely incredible. And it's also, like, again, it's fair to look at that and go, yeah, I think the Thunder will bounce back in game two. Like, yeah, I still think the Thunder can win this series. It's perfectly fine to think that. And we've seen it before in the NBA Finals history. This franchise itself went through it, if you remember, when the Oklahoma City Thunder went up 1-0 on the Miami Heat, and then the Heat ripped off 4 straight wins and beat them in 5. So, like, we'll see what happens. But again, I think that as you spin this forward, we could talk about it a little bit later. It's okay to appreciate what we're doing here with Indiana and what we're seeing.
Yes.
And also looking at it and going, yeah, over the course of a larger sample size against this Thunder team, I don't think that's going to continue, but we'll see. Mm-hmm.
We'll have more game two thoughts a little bit later on, as well as a breakdown of the odds where they sit right now for finals MVP. Mm-hmm. We do have game two in the NHL Stanley Cup final coming up later tonight.
By the way.
Yeah.
Congrats. Good job, NHL. I didn't think that this game was gone until Saturday because the NBA's game two isn't until Sunday. And so when I saw on the rundown, I was like, tonight? I'm like, oh, I think Ortega's got this wrong. And then I looked at the schedule. I'm like, oh, no, they're actually playing tonight. I am good job, NHL, for letting us watch a game immediately. And the fact that we don't get to see game two until Sunday.
Why is game two Sunday? I don't understand.
I know the NBA likes Sundays, and generally the NBA finals, like, they do drag it out quite a bit. But, I mean, the fact that, so I was looking this up, we're going to be in Omaha next week. Uh-huh. We will be, I believe we will be watching, yeah, game four will be Friday night when we're out there in Omaha.
Yes.
Like, that's crazy. Yes. Game one was yesterday.
I know. Well, so I was looking at the schedule for the NHL, and I was like, yeah, okay, we have these games. But because of the travel,
sure. It's
separate. Edmonton and Florida is the farthest possible series you can have
right. Against
one another. And so they add that extra day built into it, which I think is fair. But as an NHL fan, like, I'm sad too that we have this game tonight and then we don't have another one until Monday.
That's
so at
wild.
Least we have the NBA on Sunday, but we're going to be watching a lot of college baseball and MLB on
Saturday.
Go
play back to backs. Come on, let's get this thing going.
Which we will talk more NHL later on in hour two as well. Mike Palm is going to join us in studio. I'm very curious his opinion on, I don't know if you saw the news this morning, but Pete DeBoer getting fired from the Dallas Stars. All he does is bring teams to the conference final, but can't get over the hump to the Stanley Cup final.
He's undefeated in game sevens, correct?
Yes.
Pete DeBoer?
Yes.
And my man cannot stay at a job to save his life.
It's brutal. I genuinely feel for him. So I'm curious if the Ottinger thing was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, or what Mike Palm's opinions are on that. But let's look to game two tonight. If game one is any indication of what we're going to get in this series, we should have a bear of a series on our hands. Oilers were down 3-1 in the second period. They come back to force overtime, eventually win 4-3. Comebacks have been the Oilers' bread and butter all postseason, but giving up a lead is not the norm for the Florida Panthers, who were 31-0 under Paul Maurice in the playoffs when leading at any intermission, first or second period. And we talked about this yesterday. I think the biggest surprise for Florida was kind of just the way they looked, I don't know, gassed or dead or whatever you want to call them in the third period and beyond. Third period, 14-2, the way Edmonton outshot this team. Florida had six total shot attempts, so four go wide, just two on goal. What do they look like coming out here in game two? I kind of like Edmonton again, to be honest with you, to hold home ice.
To me, I think you agreed with me when we talked about this the other day. The issues for Florida, I thought, in game one were not largely self-inflicted, but some of it was. You know, when you have a guy coming off of the bench and then committing offsides because he goes over the blue line first, not paying attention. When you have your guy Nosek committing a penalty that leads to the power play that ultimately leads to the game-winning goal in overtime, and just little things here or there, the inability to keep up with the intensity that Edmonton had in the offensive zone and constantly having to avert your eyes and close your ears, hockey fans, causing you to be called for icing 1,000 times in the overtime because you were so desperate to get the puck out of your zone that you just kept having to do that over and over again. I thought a lot of what I watched from Florida was a lot to do with their own shortcomings. But having said that, I don't think that leads to a victory in game two. And you look at the overall numbers, especially when they're on even strength. Yeah, they won shot share, but high danger chances, they were in favor of the Edmonton Oilers for the game. Mm-hmm. Not a big edge, but an edge nonetheless. Like, I don't think there was anything crazy that I look at that and go, I'm confident that Florida's going to bounce back. I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
Sure.
But I think even if they fix their mistakes, there's still a universe in which they still, like, go down 2-0 and go back home.
Yet the betting market does really like Florida as far as today goes. We saw this open is a very similar price that we had in game one, where it opens -130, and then it kind of gets bet the other way. They're now -115 favorites at home in game two. Florida was +110. Now they're -105 on the money line. The total is 6.5, juice to the under, -125. There is one kind of rogue six out there. And this is, I could see this series starting very similar to what we saw in the Florida Panthers set against the Toronto Maple Leafs, where we have two kind of high scoring affairs on the road. They lose close games and then they come back at home and then it's anybody's series, really. So that's kind of, that's at least my brain, the way that I see this playing out a little bit. So I do lean Edmonton. And I do lean over again in tonight's game. Edmonton had four power plays, and obviously the only one they cash in on is in overtime, the Leon Draisaitl goal from Connor McDavid. But if you're a Florida Panthers team and you continue to give them opportunities, that's going to catch up with you inevitably. And so I think especially on home ice for Edmonton, there can be a little bit of that potentially on their side.
Do you think it was called any differently? Like, was it a ticky-tack sort of game in game one?
I don't think so, especially considering the goaltender interference that wasn't called, right?
Yeah.
So I think for the most part, it was called fine.
Okay.
But that goaltender interference is one that it should have been.
Yeah, because my eye's not, like, good enough with hockey that I would be able to tell you, all right, this is, like, they're calling some nonsense.
A lot of instances, I like that they let them play.
Okay, so, like, that's what I'd be curious about, too, is, you know, if they're going to let them play, then I think it would help Florida just a little bit in terms of the way that they want to play. But man, I'm really curious to see energy wise if they just come out with a little bit more. I mean, I think they were fine at the beginning of the game, but I was surprised. It's almost like they got, I don't even know if they get tired or whatever it was, but they definitely lost some focus in some edges. The game went along and maybe they just let down when they were up 3-1, but that was very surprising to see the way they fell apart after it was 3-1.
So I'm curious your opinion on my Conn Smythe ladder,
because
I did the same exercise you did for the NBA, which we'll get to a little bit later on in the show. But I have at the top of my list, Leon Draisaitl as number one, plus 450, has two goals in the first game. And especially after last year's Stanley Cup final, where he only had 3 points in seven games, didn't score at all, wasn't fully healthy. He is now, and I think it shows. He scores the first goal and the game winner with 31 seconds to go in overtime, four shots on goal, three more that missed the net. He's driving offense. So at plus 450, I have him as my best player so far. Connor McDavid minus 150, two critical assists, the one that ties the game, the one that obviously wins the game with Leon Draisaitl. He's minus 150, I think, is a little bit too much, especially if Leon Draisaitl continues scoring goals in this series.
Sure.
If they have the same amount of points and Draisaitl has more goals, how do you not go his way if Edmonton wins this thing? And I was pretty shocked to see Sam Bennett still available at 20-1. He's third on my board. He's been the best player for the Florida Panthers. Most goals in the playoffs, and he continues to add to that. 11 of his 12 have come on the road. He has two yesterday. That line with him, Verhaeghe, and Tkachuk has just been awesome. And then I put the goaltenders there at the bottom, Sergei Bobrovsky and Stuart Skinner. Even though it's a 4-3 game, you might be like, what are you talking about? They played really well.
Well, I thought, I mean, I think you could, like, Bobrovsky.
Two soft ones from Bob.
Yeah, he did.
That he would want back.
And then, but then in the, like, the overtime period, the guy's working his ass off and turning things away. I like that. I mean, you make a very compelling case for Sam Bennett, and especially if you're somebody like me who thinks Florida's going to win this series, and obviously going down 1-0 on the road is not that big of a deal. So at 20-1, that seems like something worth betting.
That's
why I like to do this exercise, right? So you can, like, kind of look at this from that perspective.
100%. Like, that was my first thought. I have him highlighted in my rundown here. Like, if there's a bet to be made in Conn Smythe right now, if you're a believer in Florida, I think Sam Bennett has the edge over Bobrovsky where things sit right now, yet he's available at 20-1. Okay, we're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're shifting gears to a little horse racing action. Jeremy Plonk is going to help us get set for the Belmont Stakes from Saratoga coming up tomorrow.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Story by Tony and JVT with you back here on Money Moves. Eight horses will take their post for the 157th running of the Belmont Stakes at Saratoga coming up on Saturday, the third jewel of horse racing's Triple Crown. And you can get in on the action with our friends at First Bet and play in the free First Bet and VSiN Belmont Stakes Pick'em Challenge. Enter your picks for Saturday's top races to win great prizes, up to $500 in wagering vouchers from First Bet. Head over to VSiN.com/Belmont to play. Again, that's VSIN.com/Belmont. Should be an awesome weekend out there at Saratoga as we welcome you back to the program. And as we welcome in now, Jeremy Plonk, lead horse racing analyst for First Bet, horseracingnow.com as well. We're going to break down not only the big marquee race in the Belmont Stakes, but a lot of other action that's going to be going on as well. Jeremy, what's going on? How are you today?
I'm good. You know, we get to the end of the road here. It's a long season. Like, the preseason starts in January for these three-year-olds trying to get ready for the Triple Crown, and we're to the end of the line here. And so it's the culmination of a season, and a lot of the really good horses that have ascended to the top are still here for the Belmont, and that makes it a really great race this year.
All right, so as we look at this field, I know we have the actual Belmont, but some of the early races, is there a field or excuse me, a guy that you like? I guess I say a guy. I don't know if there are horses. I'm a little out of it right now. It's Friday. Is there a horse you like in the Metropolitan Mile? I'll start
a guy,
over.
A jockey is on the horse, so there's that.
Well, hopefully the one that we come up with in the Met Mile, that's on the undercard, is a horse named White Abario. He won the Pegasus World Cup back in January. Really comes off a big win prepping for this race. He's been pointed for this race for a couple months now, and I think he's going to run a huge one. He's got to beat Fierceness, a horse who was the favorite in the Kentucky Derby a year ago. He's now 4 years old, and Fierceness has never lost at Saratoga. He's won three straight, but I thought his win on the Kentucky Derby Day card for Fierceness actually ran on Kentucky Oaks Day at Churchill was just kind of workmanlike, and I think White Abario is going better than he is right now. And I think we'll get a better price on him. So in one of those real matchups of the older horses that we can't wait to see, White Abario was a horse who won the Florida Derby 3 years ago. Last year, we've got Fierceness, the older horses in the country going at it. And I like White Abario quite a bit on the undercard to win the Metropolitan Mile.
It's nice when you have a race like that where there are some horse names that people are familiar with. Meanwhile, you look at the Woody Stevens Stakes and maybe some horses that people aren't as familiar with, which actually, though, can present some good odds for certain horses. Was there anything in that undercard race as well that caught your eye?
Well, the horse who led to the top of the stretch in the Kentucky Derby, Neo Equus, is going to shorten his distance, right? The Derby is a mile and a quarter, which in terms of furlongs, eighth of a mile, that's 10 furlongs. He's cutting back the run 7 furlongs, which is basically 660 yards shorter than the Kentucky Derby. I think Neo Equus on the cutback and distance can be very interesting. He'll be 8 or 10 to 1 in there. And I think, you know, the 9 in the Woody Stevens, Neo Equus is one you really want to keep an eye on. He's done everything they asked of him, right? He was never really meant to be a Derby horse, but he just kept doing well. So they took him to the longer race and then to the longer race and finally got him to the Kentucky Derby. And he ran as well as he could, taking the lead at the top of the stretch before fading. I think with the shorter distance, he can be really effective. So Neo Equus, and then a horse named Gunmetal, who people won't know from the Triple Crown series. He's run only in sprint races. This is a sprint race at 7 furlongs. And he's one who's kind of the ascending horse. He's only run 3 times. He's won 2 of them. So I like Neo Equus and Gunmetal in the Woody Stevens.
All right, the big one, the Belmont Stakes. Of these horses in the field, I guess I'll ask it like this. Are there some horses that you would not want any part of here? I know the long shots are probably the easy answers, but maybe is there a more popular horse that you would say, no, I'm not really in on that one?
Yeah, Rodriguez is a horse who's going to get bet for Bob Baffert. I believe he's 6 to 1 in the morning line, and he'll get played. I think there are some people I respect like him. Jeff Siegel, one of my best friends in the game, he likes him in this race, but I disagree with Jeff in this one. I don't think Rodriguez is coming up to the race the right way. He missed the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness with a bruised hoof. So he's coming off a 2-month layoff, and to win at a mile and a quarter against these quality of horses, I think Rodriguez is a Bob Baffert trainee, is going to get bet. There's a lot of people who think he might be the lone speed in the race, the one who sets the pace and they have to come and catch. But I think a horse named Crudo, who ran on Preakness Day on the undercard, can go with him early and kind of soften him up. So I'm against Rodriguez, who's going to be one of the, you know, horses at a mid to lower type price. But the three favorites in here, the top three horses coming out of the Kentucky Derby, and really to me, the discussion in this race is basically how you want to separate that trio.
Yeah, that is what I've kind of gathered talking to a lot of smart people, is that this is a bit of a top heavy race. You know, Journalism wins the Preakness. They're the rightful favorite. Sovereignty wins the Derby. Another big heavy hitter. What is your thought process and your approach to betting some of these top horses in a way that maybe other bettors can capitalize?
Well, I just think Journalism is the best horse in the crop. He has been since the beginning of the year. I know he ran 2nd in the Kentucky Derby. That was a race in which Sovereignty got the victory. There's a camp of thought that thinks Sovereignty now resting and not running in the Preakness is going to be better for him, that he won't be as worn down as what we're looking at with Journalism. But to me, I mean, I know your followers out there, you know, like the sports analogy sometimes. If you've been watching the Women's College World Series, there's a pitcher for Texas Tech named Nyjah Kennedy, who's the best pitcher in all of college softball. And she's throwing all 3 games of the Women's College World Series final. Whereas Texas went with their ace, Tegan Kavan, in the first game. They didn't pitch her last night until a little bit in relief, and now they'll probably come back with her tonight. To me, if you've got the best, you come and you just keep going with it, you know? And I don't think that Texas has any advantage by resting their ace last night as they get to game three. You're getting to a deciding game and you've got to beat the best. I still want the best out there. And to me, journalism is the best horse. So running in all three legs of the Triple Crown doesn't bother me so much as it does a lot of bettors. So with a lot of bettors who are bothered by that, this is a favorite who I think is going to go off higher odds than he should. So you can still find value in a favorite and in a horse who's fairly low in odds because they should be lower, right? And a lot of your sports bettors, even money is the game that you're playing a lot of times. This horse will be above even money. He'll be close to 8-5, the morning line, if not a little higher, 9-5 or 2-1. And I think it's excellent value because I think he's just the best horse in this crop. And, you know, he's the Michael Jordan of this group. And there are some Stockton and Malones in there, but it's still Jordan to me when you get to these big classic races. And also the one thing, too, about running in all three Triple Crown races this year, because Belmont Park, the racetrack, is under renovation right now, the Saratoga racetrack is offering the Belmont Stakes at a mile and a quarter mile shorter than what we're used to seeing in the Belmont. So any historical stats you read and hear about horses running in all three legs of the Triple Crown might be softened up for the final race. This race isn't as demanding as all the other ones in history. Until last year, they've been running the Belmont at a mile and a half. Last year, with the construction starting, they ran it at Saratoga for the first time. So this is a different situation. I think at a mile and a quarter, I just want to take the best horse. I think journalism's the best horse.
And Jeremy, it sounds like weather-wise, we're not worried too much about this, especially by the time we get to post time.
Yeah, tomorrow looks pretty good. Today, they've got a National Weather Service flash flood advisory in Saratoga Springs. Sometime between noon and midnight tonight, they're supposed to get an inch and a half of rain. So today's races, if you're looking at Saratoga, there could be all hell breaking loose in the afternoon. But I would say if it stops raining today, even midnight, these racetracks have incredible drainage systems on them. And once they open them up and harrow them, I think we'll probably run on a decent track tomorrow. I don't think it'll be a sloppy track like it was in the Derby. But even if it is on a sloppy track, remember, the Derby 1-2-3 finishers all have experience over a bad racetrack, right? I mean, it was as sloppy as could be on Kentucky Derby Day. So it's not going to impact the big three, you know, Sovereignty and Baez is the horse we haven't really talked about, who was third in the Kentucky Derby. He's got a chance to improve, you know, and he's right there. He's not far off of them. He's lost to journalism in his last two. But when we talk about value plays, Baez was 14-1 in the Santa Anita Derby when he ran second against journalism. He was 13-1 in the Kentucky Derby when he ran third behind the top two horses. Now you're probably going to get 3 or 4 to 1. On a horse who's lost two straight against these, not by much, but you're not getting the same value back that you got in the past couple races. So to take a bet on Baeza, I would want more price than what's probably going to be offered. I think he'll be what we call an underlay price.
Yeah, 4-1, that morning line price we see right now on the 6-horse Baeza. Jeremy, you're amazing. Thank you so much. Enjoy the weekend.
All right. Good luck, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Plonk, everybody, again, lead horse racing analyst for First Bet, horseplayernow.com. You can follow him on X at horseplayernow as well. I loved all of the cross-sport comparisons,
yes,
though. We got the Malone and Jordan. We got the Nyjah Kennedy there for Texas Tech. By the way, I was just looking at those odds for the final that's coming up today in the Women's College World Series, Texas Tech and Texas. Texas Tech with Nyjah Kennedy out there again. She wants the ball. Minus 130 favorites against Texas. Run total in that one, 5.5. And I do feel so much for Texas if they do end up losing this thing, because they have been second fiddle to Oklahoma,
right,
year after year after year. You don't have to face them this time around. They're done. They're out. You knocked them out. Yet here you are with an opportunity to win the College World Series, and you're a dog again.
It's just knocked out by the team that knocked them out. Huh?
Yes, you feel for them so much right now. And we have had a turn of fate in the Super Regional in North Carolina as well. Your Tar Heels up 5-1 right now over Arizona. We're going to take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will do baseball. Just talking a little more MLB. Nate Kreckman of Altitude is going to join us. We'll get into what the heck has been going on with the Rockies for better and for worse. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Run along here on VSiN, the Sports Sports Betting Network, Sirius XM, Channel 158. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. Still to come, Nate Kreckman, Altitude Sports Radio, going to join us in just a little bit. We will also break down all of the Aaron Rodgers to the Steelers of it all. Coming up in Hour 2, VP of Operations Mike Palm's going to join us in studio, talking plenty of NBA and NHL postseason. Lots of action still to come here on Money Moves today. But let's start with Nate, who I believe we have here on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow him on X at Nate Kreckman. And I know you two have had a little, I don't know, dalliance, maybe we can call it, because of your affinity for the Rockies lately. They get the series sweep against the Marlins, and Nate really appreciated a little Rockies love. Colorado needs it right now, Nate.
They need all the love that they can possibly get. Otherwise, Major League Baseball is going to have to contract them and burn Coors Field to the ground. So, yeah, a little bit of love swept the Marlins. Look out, Mets. This is going to be a rough weekend for you guys. Hey, they got to 10 wins by June. It's all that matters, guys.
Don't let the Rockies get hot, right, JVT?
No, but they were. Look, I guess I'll ask it like this. Nothing is ever as bad or as good as it seems, Nate. Like, are they really this bad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they're this bad. No, it's absolutely legit. And I can give you, as evidence, I present this. All right. Highest strikeout rate in baseball. Third lowest walk rate in baseball. 26th in home runs in baseball. So this is like the worst true outcome team that you have ever seen in your life. They don't hit on the road, but the weird thing about this Rockies team, the Rockies almost never hit on the road. They don't hit at home either. Their home OPS at Coors Field is 15th right now. They've never finished lower than 7th in their history as a ball club. So they're at the most hitter-friendly park in all of baseball. They don't score runs when they play there. There's like underlying numbers that you can look at and say, oh, okay, like there's a little bit of promise there. Like their hard hit rate is very good. They barrel up the ball an awful lot. But they also like couple that up with one of the highest swing and miss rates, one of the highest chase rates. So like they're selling the farm to get any kind of hard contact. This is just a terrible baseball team in every way imaginable. The one thing that they have going for them is their bullpen is actually okay. And their bullpen, 12 and two-thirds of scoreless work against the Marlins. That's how they swept Miami. So the bullpen's all right. Basically, everything else about this club is absolutely atrocious. They're as 12 and 50 as it gets.
Wow. And Nate, going through their schedule, it's not going to get much easier here. You mentioned they start that series with the Mets coming up today, but then you've got the San Francisco Giants. The Braves haven't been anything to write home about, but they're in Atlanta, in Washington, Arizona, the Dodgers. It just gets tougher and tougher for them. So is this a team that you think from a betting perspective for us, we just continue to find ways to fade on the run line, the -2.5 runs with the opponent? Like, what is the way to approach this Rockies team?
Yeah, I think it's generally look at the opponent. Like if they play, the thing about the Marlins series is, I mean, the Rocks have been playing like an absolute murderer's row. You know, they went from the Tigers to the Padres, got swept by the Rangers, got one in Arizona, swept by the Phillies in four, lost 2 of 3 to the Yankees, swept at Wrigley, swept in Queens against the Mets. Like they finally ran into a bad club. So I would say, you got a struggling Braves team. So the next six are going to be the Mets and the Giants. That's not going to go well for Colorado. They might get one in both of those series. But then after that, that's when things get a little bit friendlier. The Braves have struggled. They got Washington. Like, take a look at those series as opportunities to maybe get good prices on Denver. Like, I had Rockies money line their first two games of the Marlins series. I was surprised that they got game three, but I actually bet the Rockies for the first time all year on Monday and Tuesday of this week. And hey, it worked out for me. But generally, continue to fade the Rockies and even just like weird things like team totals, like hit those unders. Cause like I said, they don't even score at Coors Field. They're just awful.
Yeah. I'll ask it like this. The rest of the season, if I were to set the number at 4.5 series wins, would you go over or under?
I tell you what, I'll go over for just the sake of like, okay. exhaustion and attrition can hit some clubs. Like I said, you know, Atlanta and Washington. Washington's a four-game set, so they'll probably split that. But they might be able to get that Atlanta series. They got the White Sox coming in 4th of July weekend. So that was actually the one I had circled. I was like, that's going to be the Rockies' first series win of the year. They're going to beat the other historically crappy team, the White Sox. But they ended up getting the Marlins, who should just be ashamed of themselves for getting swept by this Rockies team. That's absolutely unacceptable. And all 11 people that went out to watch those games in Miami as the Marlins took on the Rockies, they should just go home and bury their head in the pillow. It's depressing.
Nate Kreckman, 92.5 FM Altitude Sports Radio, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line.
Can I ask a follow-up really quick? Just out of curiosity for how bad this season has gone. What happened to Brenton Doyle? I mean, this guy I thought was supposed to be on the rise a little bit here, hit 260 last year. My man's barely eclipsing 200. I think that's kind of been the surprising part, is pieces like Doyle have gotten worse, and I thought he was supposed to get better.
It's wild. Like, basically, like Ezekiel Tovar is hitting really well right now. Hunter Goodman has been a surprise. The organization didn't expect much out of him, and he's been a nice surprise. He might even be a borderline all-star candidate because the Rockies have to get somebody. But outside of that, like, everybody has regressed. Like, Tolio was one of their best prospects. They sent him to the minors. That dude had a 48% strikeout rate on the road, which is unfathomable. Ryan McMahon has regressed miserably. He can't stop striking out. Brenton Doyle is an outstanding defensive center fielder. He's a gold glove center fielder, but he's kind of at best a league average hitter. He gets slightly inflated numbers from Coors Field, but if you look at some of the advanced stuffs, he's right around kind of league average. He's just been absolutely awful this year. I think he's a guy that he was on the bereavement list for a little while earlier this year. He hits the proverbial squeeze in the bat too hard with Brenton Doyle. I think he's one of the guys that has really felt the weight of how bad this team has been. And it's just, he's really, really struggled. He's been shockingly bad so far this year. And it's, again, it's one of the reasons why this club is in this place, but also they're in this place because they're counting on Brenton Doyle to be one of the top two bats in their lineup. Like, you have to be ashamed of yourself if you're a major league franchise and you're like, hey, we're hanging our hat on Ryan McMahon and Brenton Doyle to be our power guys. Like, what are you doing as a front office when that's what you end up with? Like, seriously, guys, I'm only giving you a sampling of it. This is what we do every single day on our show, is just like scream about how it got this bad. But the reality is, and if anybody wants to know, like, people are from the outside, are like, how did it happen? How did Colorado get this bad? I can boil it down this simple. They decided a couple of years ago to actively not participate in the business of Major League Baseball. Like, they had guys that were coming up on expiring contracts. They were just like, nope, we're not trading those guys. We're hanging them on and we're letting them walk for absolutely nothing but like a supplemental draft pick. So they didn't do anything with any of that stuff. They blew the Nolan Arenado thing so badly that they decided, hey, we got to give 7 years and $180 million to broken Chris Bryant. And shocker, Chris Bryant is broken and he can't get out there on the field. Like, this is the worst run franchise in all of professional sports. And again, the biggest reason why is, like, they somehow don't recognize the dumpster fire that is 2 feet in front of their face. It's incredible. They're awful. It is the absolute disgust and shame of our city. But they do have a beautiful ballpark, and we love going out there.
All right.
I was going to say, not afraid to mince words here. Yeah. 60 seconds real quickly. Anything for today that better should be aware of in this first game of Rockies-Mets?
Again, like I said, the Rocks don't really score all that much at home, and they just got swept by the Mets. I know that Francisco Lindor is coming in with a toe problem, but the Mets are a lineup that can crush, and Antonio Senzatella is starting tonight, and he's terrible. So again, find value on the Mets wherever you can get it.
Okay, maybe that opposing team total over, that kind of stuff. Nate, you're awesome. Thanks, man. So much for the time. We really appreciate it.
It's great to come on this show. It's great that my two friends are doing a show together on VSiN. That is so fun. Two best last names in the business doing a show together. Best show on VSiN. Take that, Mitch and Paul.
Yeah, thank you. We appreciate it. And by the way, Chase Dolander looks pretty solid, so you guys have that. So don't get too down to the dumps over there. Yeah.
He's good. He's one prospect that can't fix everything.
That's right.
I was going to say, don't work too hard, but with all this talk about the Rockies, you're probably going to have to. So,
have you
thanks,
appreciate
man.
You, buddy. See ya. Nate Kreckman, everybody. Make sure you follow him on X at Nate Kreckman, K-R-E-C-K-M-A-N, 92.5 FM, Altitude Sports Radio.
I was listening to their show. They opened their show with the Rockies, and I was like, wow, to cover locals. To cover locally.
Love Nate, though, and all the Mountain West love. He's awesome. We're going to take a quick timeout when we come back, resetting hour two of the program. What are our thoughts on this Aaron Rodgers match with the Pittsburgh Steelers? Oh. We'll be right back. I know you can't wait for that.